There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. One of these days that I've said this in the past, it doesn't work because there are four stories on top of where the opulent FM Talk 106.5 studios are. But if we ever got a one-story studio, if we could have a convertible feature so we could do this show, we could drop the top on a day like today. Fantastic outside. If you needed a numerical confirmation of that, I was listening this morning when Dr. Bill handed out the very rare and coveted 2.0 weekend weather scale. Weather is fantastic. So many activities going on. Speaking of which, I may take my truck, but take the van. I'm heading down to Smoke on the Farm with my man Joey Mason this afternoon. That gets cranked up at 4 o'clock, so hopefully if you get a chance to stop on by, visit with me, and then we'll all go check out the great, great cooking going on. Smoke on the Farm goes on today and tomorrow, and if you need more information on that, you can go to his Facebook page for Mason Hills Farm. Speaking of Mason Hills Farm, your chance to win a $100 gift certificate today from Mason Hills Farm as we get you ready for another great weekend in college football. That then brings me to this as well. If you have not, if you're one of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of us in the College Pick'em Challenge, make sure you get your picks put in today for the games over this next weekend. I need some rehabilitation. I feel good about my picks for this weekend because I was destroyed last weekend because of all the things that happened that weren't supposed to happen when it came to the college football matchups, but I'm in and ready to go for this week. So do the same thing. If you're in the mix, make sure you get your picks in. I mentioned to Jeff that my buddy J.B. Buono was coming on, and this is the nature of what he does and what I do. He and I have been talking, you know, throughout the really through from Helene. And then, of course, Milton, he's in Tampa. He worked for WKRG here. He and I got to be buddies. He lives in Tampa now and works for WFLA. And so we're, you know, we just had talked this morning, just said tentatively he was going to hop on, kind of giving us, he's good because he's like so many of us here. He can give you like a real world. He's a TV guy, but he's like a regular dude, too, and give you a, you know, a regular person's take on what's happening in Sarasota, you know, in Hillsborough County and through Florida where Milton hit. But the nature of his job, he got called out. And this is the story. He texted me like as the show started right after I'd talked to Jeff. He said, man, I can't do it. We got something going on again here. So they've got the recovery efforts going on after Milton hit the Tampa area. Maybe some of y'all, actually, I know several of y'all on the text line have family and friends in that area. He said, man, we got a flood. I got to go. I can't do the show. And then I saw this story. So this is a secondary flood. So this is freshwater flooding. Right. So you had the storm surge, and actually they didn't get it bad on the surge there in the Tampa area. Actually drained Tampa Bay, kind of like I pointed out, it's happened here before, too. Depending on the orientation, if you get the wraparound winds, you can drain a bay. Well, it flooded to the south of there. But the rain flooding is what they're dealing with now. So this is just coming out down there. And if Pasco County, which is north of Tampa, this is just It'd be like Washington County is to Mobile County, right? It's the next county up to the north. They have a flood evacuation warning. This is what got my, he said, man, we got a flood. I can't do the show. I went and looked at this. It's like the entire county, which is just, so I guess as all the water that fell to the east and the interior is trying to get out to the Gulf of Mexico, the amounts are so much that they're having, it says here, Pasco County has experienced historic flooding in low-lying areas, neighborhoods around the county, anywhere near a river or lake. If y'all spend some time there in Florida, that's like So a lot of places are near a river or lake. So the water is quickly rising. They are encouraging all people to leave and evacuate, get to higher ground now. So I guess they have some, I don't know if there's been some kind of breach of some kind of water control device or just finally all that water's trying to get out to the Gulf at one time. But now here we are, you know, a day after, 2 days after, Milton, and here comes this second issue. You know, you had the initial flooding and you had the storm surge, and now they have like kind of high river, like, you know, we would have here. You get a bunch of rain north of the dams, right, on the Alabama and Tombigbee, and it doesn't, we don't get the flooding immediately to the Mobile. It takes a day or two, and then the river starts rising. But in this case, they are rising quickly enough. They're using all their, I guess, the people that had been doing the search and rescue around that area are now like pulling people that had, everything was okay or generally had fared okay in the storm. Now they're pulling them out of their homes because of secondary flooding. So that's what happened with JB, but it gives us a heads up of what's happening down in Tampa. All right. Also coming up in about 15 or so minutes, I'll be joined by AL2 candidate on the Republican side, Caroline Dobson. Had that debate earlier this week. Somebody had texted me about that earlier. You know what? I have not had a bunch of stuff happen yesterday. Did not get to watch the AL.com debate yet, but I'm going to talk to her about it. I know several of y'all have. If you got questions for Caroline Dobson, she's going to join us here just after about 12:35. So, you know, heard the debate was, one headline said it was testy. Not testies. It was testy. A testy debate. So we'll listen to that. I wonder where you are on this, because this district as drawn, and I have my issues with the geography of AL2. I have since before it even happened. Remember, I said, how are we supposed to have a community of interest in a congressional district, AL1 being the same now, that goes from state line to state line? It just doesn't. And maybe it's just old habits die hard, you know, that AL1 for the majority of my life, or I tell you what, since I've been paying attention to things like that in my life, AL1 has been Southwest Alabama. It just made sense, right? The way the district was drawn. Now you have, I think, a disparity. I don't think I know. You have a disparity in communities of interest within this district. You have the two urban centers, Mobile being one, Montgomery being the other, and a lot of what they call the hinterlands in between. And so I think it stretches what the community of interest would be. How they deal with that, I don't know. How you do that, how you make sure you're doing what is needed 100% for people in the extreme southwest portion of the district down here and the extreme northeast or eastern portion of the district. Yeah, it's a, so, but we'll talk about that. If you have questions, though, you can get those to me on the text line at 343-0106, 343-0106. In addition, we'll be coming up later on in the 1 o'clock hour. John Hill from Ascension Technologies. So many videos are out here. Y'all send me so many videos on the text line. You're like, look at this. Did they really say this? Or what? The AI, right? Or deep fakes and all that. Then I caution you, you know, you see something and you look at it. You've got to go figure out if it's real or not. Sometimes they're poorly done and you can tell they're AI. But also, who has the time to stop and take all the time to have to be, a detector of what's AI out there? Where is this going? Does it, does it just incrementally get better? In other words, does it get to look more real? Does it logarithmically get better? Some of the questions we'll ask John Hill from Ascension Technology. So you got AI questions. He's going to join us at 1 to talk about that as well. Also coming up later on in the show, Baldwin County Parade of Homes coming up. One of the homes you want to check out, the featured home this year. The builder of that home is going to join us. Also, we're talking about bluegrass and Stapleton and a whole lot more. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106 for a call or text. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:20, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. You just mentioned the report I got from J.B. Buono down there in Tampa. They got like a secondary issue with now flood water, I guess, that, you know, the rain that fell to the east of the coast, now trying to get back to the Gulf. They got rivers rising big time down there, secondary rescue efforts going on down there. But it reminds me of a conversation we had earlier in the week with my buddy David McCrary from LCM Motor Cars. David, I know so many times you and I talk, you'll be at auction in Florida, right? That's a place where a lot of the vehicles y'all get come from. And you said that is changing. You saw that coming with the first storm, and now it's showing up, right? So, I mean, if somebody's been wanting to check out a vehicle, this is the best inventory we might see for a little bit.
Yeah, I was watching some stuff this morning. There was a lot of about 800 cars, and they're all getting higher. So now's the time to buy, especially if you don't have somebody adjusting the prices. And we're not going to adjust our prices. We'll keep them the same. It's we got a lot of nice trucks out here, and of course, trucks are going to bring the world right now because everybody's trying to get something to work out of. So now's the time to come see us. We got great finances and great inventory.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a news education at the same time talking about vehicles, that this is how it affects your business, right? I mean, y'all are going to end up, you said, looking to the west and other places to get these vehicles. But yeah, I mean, you take that big area out and inventory is going to get slimmer.
And you got to be careful. You know, we're not perfect, but you got to be careful what you're buying and who you're buying it from, because there'll be some of these cars down in Florida that get flooded that are cleaned up and vacuumed out real nice, and they make them look real special, and they'll send them out west or, you know, to different auctions, and you end up buying one, and then you got a problem. So once salt water gets into something, it's over.
For sure. So people want to take, if they've been on the fence about checking these vehicles out, I'm going to say today's the day to do it. This weekend's the time to do it. So tell them how to find you. What are your hours?
We're here till 6 o'clock during the week, 8 to 6, Monday through Friday. And then on Saturdays, we're here from 9 to 2. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068. Our address is 5711 Highway 90. We're in Theodore, 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Or you go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Good stuff, David. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Have a good weekend, Sean.
All right, you too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Yeah, I mean, how many times have we talked to him? That's one of the areas that, you know, they find a lot of vehicles. But now they got to stop because of what's going on down there. And we'll have some period of scarcity in that going forward. And like I said, I'm just watching this right now unfolding down in Pasco County with the flooding. Michael on the text line said, I love living in Pasco. It's still an area that has a lot of old Florida with tons of farms, ranches, and just pretty country. It is, and to north of there too, Michael, and I guess north and east, spend some time in there, the in cattle country over there. And they really, you're right, there's just some beautiful areas there. And it looks like, I mean, it's not the entire county. It's going underwater, of course, and there was actually some topography in Pasco County, but I'm watching this unfolding now on Florida television down there, and there's a whole bunch of people there now that made it through everything, and now they're like, you got to get out of your houses now. Jason said, so now you're saying the government has flood machines too? No, I didn't. Oh, did you see the story? This is, we saw something like this in when Helene was coming in. Now, this is from Milton, the story from thesun.com. Incredible moment. The stranded sailor was clinging to life on his cooler, was rescued after Hurricane Milton. How many of these at sea survival stories have we seen that involve a cooler? A lot of them, right? Right here in our area. And I'll go through this. We talk about it on the Outdoor Show a bunch. In today's world, with the technology that's there, if you're fishing offshore and you're filling up the tanks with gas on that boat, the stuff I'm talking about here is not an expensive thing to do. And that is to get an EPIRB. So you get a EPIRB system that you use to give your lat long as an emergency. As well, I carry a second. I think it's a thing called a Garmin InReach, okay, that I can clip to a life jacket or something like that. This stuff stays right there within 1.5 steps from where I am at the helm. This stuff is important to have with you. You know, you go in the water, the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic, these are big bodies of water. How do they find you? The technology is there. And somebody said to me the other day, well, it almost costs $300 for that when you're talking about. I said, okay, $300. How much did you spend to go out in the Gulf and fish? Ice, fuel, bait. So don't tell me you can't do $300 or $400, whatever, for something to save your life. And like I said, I have a secondary because it's my personality and I'm a Boy Scout, so I have two ways to do it. But it goes on the story. It said the captain, boat captain, survived a nightmare as he was plucked from the sea by a rescue chopper after his vessel sank. And you can see the Coast Guard chopper doing it. Awesome rescue teams with the Coast Guard. And it shows him riding it out on his cooler as a flotation. Now, why he also doesn't have secondary, and I mean, if you're out sailing in the Gulf, you don't have some other secondary, number one, a warning device or a locator device, but in addition, why you don't have multiple ways of floating other than your cooler. But I mean, there's so many of these stories. I think there's some of y'all nodding along with me. How many stories we hear that people are clinging to a cooler as their flotation? They said he was clinging to his cooler 30 miles out to sea off Longboat Key when he was found by the helicopter. Coast Guard officials said the man had survived a nightmare scenario. His boat had become disabled off the coast on Monday and had returned to the vessel to try to save it early Wednesday. As the storm worsened, it was too late for him to escape. And so the boat was messed up. Something happened. I don't know what was wrong with it, but something was messed up. So he somehow got back to shore and he comes back out to get it. And when he does, well, the storm's too close, and there he was. And it said he rode it out. Coast Guard managed to find the man, estimated that he had survived winds were at that location of 90 miles an hour. This is when he's in the water, and swells of 25 feet. Unbelievable. Unbelievable story there. And right now, the fatality numbers keep coming up, and I'm scared that as the searching goes on more in Florida, those numbers will come up as well. And I see a couple stories here of groups that are getting supplies to take them to victims of Milton and of Helene. Remember, always, if you got this, you're organizing through your church or your civic group, whatever, and you're getting supplies to go haul down somewhere, just send us a text or send me an email. Text 343-0106 or email Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, and we'll get that information out. And Michael also says, yeah, citrus is awesome as well, Citrus County. Dunellian and Crystal River are my ideal example of God's country. It is pretty country, Michael. I agree with you. Brandon says, InReach Mini attached to the cooler, not a bad idea, along with one on my belt. Oh, so you got two of them? So I got the EPIRB, and then I got the InReach Mini with that little clip thing on it. And yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm going to not take the cooler, but I'm going to have, if I'm out that far, I'm going to have probably something else, you know, the life rafts in a bag or that kind of stuff out there. All right, 343-0106. Coming back here in a couple minutes, I'll be joined by Caroline Dobson. I know it's just, she'll probably go count down the actual number of days between now and November 5th, and in many, before Election Day. And this is a big deal. You look at AL2, this is drawn to be a majority-minority district, which was amusing to me that they use people's race, right, to determine. This is to give Democrats a chance in the state. They push past the point where they say, well, it's about black Alabamians. Now, it's about black Alabamians who vote Democrat is what the district is. It's drawn to give them a district they can win here, right? In AL2. But I wonder, just seeing some of the stories out there, and we'll see how it comes out, that this kind of one size fits all, you look a certain way, you have melanin or lack of melanin in your skin, therefore you think a certain way politically. I wonder if that's going to be shown to be true and not much change from the past, or that's going to be shown to be not the case after November 5th in AL2. Be interesting to hear your thoughts on that as well at 343-0106. And do people know that they're voting in AL2? I mean, I know y'all do, but you start looking at places where people just kind of woke up and realized in the last week there's an election coming up in just 3 weeks. Do they have any idea that where they're voting and where the lines are now? We'll talk about it. And thank you. Jerry said that I heard the new iPhone will allow for satellite communication. I saw that story too. Like when it's out of cell, you can use it that way as well. I mean, if you're going offshore, you've already spent a lot of money. Spend the extra money to have the safety. I know it you'd think it's never going to happen, but the people that they pluck out of the Gulf didn't think it was going to happen either. So do take care. All right, be right back. Caroline Dobson next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this beautiful Friday. So much stuff going on this weekend. I'm heading out this afternoon. Hope to see you out at Smoke on the Farm. My man Joey Mason out at Mason Hills Farms, and their cooking contest going on today and tomorrow. Slide out there and see if I can get some samples. Hopefully you'll be able to join me this afternoon, Smoke on the Farm. And I think doors open up, the gates open up at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and then tomorrow throughout the day as well. But we'll talk more about that in a little bit. I mentioned we would go to Caroline Dobson, AL2's Republican candidate. Coming up in, Caroline, I said I figured I didn't have to count the days. You could tell me how many days to election.
Yes, no, we're, yeah, just about, yeah, 3.5 weeks out, so...
not that y'all are paying attention that every day, right?
No, no, not at all. No, but very grateful for the cooler weather. And yeah, it kind of coincides with a lot of things going on in all the communities in the district. So grateful for the opportunities to get to interact with voters.
Yeah, does that work? Like, we have like so many things in October because weather finally gets nice. Does it work because you can go to a couple different events and see a lot of people that vote in AL too?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. So it's a lot of, and so many great charitable organizations have their annual fundraisers. Victory Health Partners that you're just talking about. I'm hoping to get out there. Anyway, it's a good opportunity to participate in good causes and also get to meet voters and have a good time too.
Good deal. Yeah, I want to talk about the debate from earlier this week with you, and I have not seen it yet. Several of many people here have watched it and were talking about it on the text line with me. Your takeaway as you left that debate, or was it a debate or a forum? I always mess the terms up. Which one was it?
A rose by any other name, but this was characterized as a debate. Grateful to AL.com for hosting it, and I think it demonstrated just the fact that my opponent and other members of the radical left don't have any solutions because they helped create the problems that have, certainly killed economic opportunity, caused a rise in inflation, and have made the world less safe. And they'll try to distract with, everything from, personal net worth to anything else. But when it comes down to it, they don't have a plan because they helped create these problems.
Yeah, on that, and it's so many times in politics, the tennis ball that gets chased is not the thing that's key to the success of a leader or their constituents, but it is we see it in the presidential cycle, both sides too, the things people chase. But this was brought up about net worth, and I look at it and go, well, I don't even know. I had no idea one way or another. But why does it matter? But yeah, that was brought up that because your net worth, they said, I don't know. I think your opponent called you a billionaire, right? that you were somehow, you couldn't understand what was going on in the district. Parse that out for a second. I hate to chase this tennis ball, but this is what people are talking about.
No. Well, exactly that, a distraction. I think a lot of people say, oh, we don't want to hear people talk about, presidential candidates talk about their golf game. Well, yeah, I don't think, net worth is really particularly relevant. However, in this case, I'm grateful that AL.com fact-checked it because Shamari Figures is actually a lot wealthier than I am. And again, has spent the past over a decade in D.C. among the political elite. I grew up in Beatrix, Alabama. Both of my parents were rural health care providers. Both of my dad's parents were public school teachers. Both my mom's parents were veterans. When we talk about issues impacting small towns and rural communities, that's how I grew up, working hard and giving back to the community. And my husband and I moved back to Alabama over 5 years ago because I wanted to raise my kids in Alabama and I wanted to help make Alabama better. I didn't know in what way that would be, whether in the private sector, the public sector, but Alabama has given so much to me in terms of the values and the community that we have here, and that's how I wanted to raise my kids, and I wanted to do what I could to help make Alabama better, because as you know, we certainly get a bad rap nationally, and folks, want to say Alabama's backwards, but we have an incredible state. We have so many so many wonderful people, so many incredible resources. And certainly we are not perfect. There are a lot of things we need to work on, but I'm so proud to be from Alabama. And so to say that, you know, I'm not fighting for Alabama families by someone who literally started leasing an apartment in the district 2 days before the filing deadline, someone who's literally swooped down here to run for this race, but isn't raising his kids here and hasn't been invested in the future of Alabama is again, just a, I think, a rather pathetic distraction.
Yeah. So from the distraction, so I'm glad we cleared the air on that, because that does seem to get what gets chatter, but I am more interested in the things that affect us directly, right, in AL2. This one is, so you and I talked about it, then I had Shamari Figures on, and it is, in this one, it's pretty binary. You talk about illegal immigration and what it means for folks in AL2, why it would be important to stem the tide of illegal immigration. On the flip side, your opponent says nobody ever asked him about that. So address that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that shows me, and I think it's evident. I mean, I think a lot of folks are saying, you know, Jeff Poore the other day was saying, you know, where is Shamari Figures? We haven't run into each other that much on the trail. And I really, obviously, it's a big district, but, you know, I've made it my mission and put in 16-hour days trying to hear from folks all over this district. And folks are really concerned about the state of our open border, about the fentanyl deaths of Alabamians, there was a sex trafficking ring in Montgomery a little over a month ago that was shut down, and just the strain on resources that's created when you inject 8 to 10 million non-citizens within the span of 3.5 years. That is a strain on rural health care. It's also a strain on our education system. I think a lot of folks have seen and talk about stories and say that they have, you know, daughters or daughters-in-law that are teachers, public school teachers throughout the district, that all of a sudden have an influx of Spanish-speaking students that cannot speak English or other, I mean, not just Spanish-speaking, but, you know, students that can't speak English, and no way of, you know, helping those students. And at the same time, you're holding back others in the class when you've kind of got this wide array of students that you're trying to teach to. It's just an impossible situation. And that's, you know, again, that's, I think, one of the milder repercussions of our open border. But, of course, my opponent doesn't want to talk about this because he was part of Biden's transition team that flung open our border. And again, the statistics from ICE are that 662,000 people with criminal histories have come across our border. 13,000 of those were people with murder histories have come across our borders. And again, we're seeing this in our communities. A young 19-year-old in Sims earlier this summer was killed by an illegal alien drunk driver who had previously been arrested for drunk driving and released. So, you know, it's impacting every single one of our communities in this district. And the thing is that it's so stoppable. The Biden-Harris Figures administration opened our borders without legislative action. They could close them, but they refused to. And that really, again, that jeopardizes not just the safety of our country, but also the economic security and the ability of us to provide for our own, as we've seen most recently in the wake of Hurricane Helene and Milton, and Mallorca saying we don't have adequate funding. Well, we just spent $1.4 billion on non-citizens. It's a real slap in the face to folks that have worked hard all their lives and contributed to their communities and now find themselves, you know, faced with a natural disaster in which they've lost everything, and the government's prioritized someone who just walked across our southern border.
You know, on the criminal aspect of it and deporting these people, I'll hear a lot of times, and you add this to the platform if you want to, they'll say, listen, citizens are committing these same crimes as the illegal immigrants. And I add to this, I'd like to deport them too. I just don't have a mechanism because they're citizens. You know, if I could deport them, I'd line them up on the deportation line as well. But in this case, here's somebody who doesn't have to be here, who's shown themselves before to be a violent criminal and now is doing it again.
Yes, no, exactly. It's really troubling. And we've had some of the Alabama delegation put forth some legislation that you think everyone would agree with that should not be partisan. Senator Britt sponsored the Lake and Riley Act. And if you're, you know, if you are detained for a crime and convicted of a crime and you're an illegal alien, you go back to wherever you came from. And
that seems pretty
that
logical.
Was blocked by Democrats.
Yeah, they block it. And I'm like, what about that one? You know, what about, because now we've shown that this person is not a contributor to the country. You can't make the Ellis Island argument here. So why not say bye?
Right, right. Well, and the thing is, too, because of this administration, they fling open the southern border, and then there's a huge backlog when it comes to folks that are trying to come here legally that we need. I was recently talking to a nursing home owner who has several nursing homes in the district, you know, which are very much struggling in part due to increased regulations from the Biden-Harris administration that they cannot meet with local workforce. And so they, over the course of the past 5 years, have applied for 60 registered nurses from abroad who want to come to America. We need them in our rural communities. To date, they have had one approved. so on wow. the, you know, it's again, just really nonsensical and detrimental to our country because, I mean, of course, we absolutely need legal immigration. And you and I've talked before, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need migrant workers. But, you know, by the same token, in 2022, the Biden-Harris administration capped the number of H-2B workers, which the timber industry is very reliant upon. But they put a quota on it. And so for half a year, folks in the timber industry that needed migrant workers that wanted to come here couldn't because of this arbitrary quota. Meanwhile, you know, the southern border is just flung open. So having a tremendous negative impact on our country. It's really killing our country, and we've got to do something about it.
You know, I am a proponent, and it sounds, sometimes people are like, what are you talking about? I am a proponent of legal immigration, not just work visas, but legal immigration. And it's like, absolutely. if you stop the flow of water in one place, it does find another way to go. And the way I would look at it is, if you're like me and believe in legal immigration and increasing that, if we stop the illegal immigration, then there's more of a cry for, hey, maybe we should look at expediting legal immigration in the process, opening up quota for more people, and bringing folks in that become legal citizens. But until you stop the water that's flowing through the illegal route, you won't have pressure on Congress or the executive branch to do it another way, the legal way.
Right, right. And we look and see where the priorities of this administration are when it comes to staffing. So, I mean, you know, some have argued, oh, well, there's not the manpower to vet all the legal immigration applications. That process should certainly be streamlined and less regulated, probably, or regulated in a more efficient manner. But then secondly, you look at, you know, this administration that pushed for and got passed, you know, an $80 billion increase to the IRS budget. They hired 87,000 employees with the IRS. And you're thinking, you know, and I'm thinking, like, do we really need to expand the IRS? Or would that have, you know, could we have maybe expanded you know, the number of folks that are vetting these folks that want to come to America that we need here. But we certainly don't need 662,000 folks with criminal histories. And what's also not talked about is, you know, during the Trump administration lost track of 1,400 minors at the border, which, you know, as a mom, that is 1,400 too many.
Right.
That's a travesty. This administration in the past 3.5 years, again, my opponent, part of the team that opened the border, they have lost track of 320,000 minors at the border.
Unbelievable. I mean, and where do they end up?
They're inviting a humanitarian crisis. They truly are with the open border policy. Yes, where do they end up? You know, I mean,
I think.
It's very, very, very concerning. So, but yes, to your point, when you don't incentivize people to follow and don't make it possible for people to utilize our legal immigration process, then you're gonna have desperate people coming across the border. And I have no doubt there are a lot of people coming across our southern border right now illegally that want a better life for their families, but a lot of them are being used by cartels, mm-hmm. are being subjected to all sorts of treatment. And I visited the border back in August with Congressman Tony Gonzalez. His district in Texas has about 823 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. And yeah, it was just devastating. The stories we met with Border Patrol, but also with local law enforcement, and just the strain on resources. But we also saw these stash houses where cartels will literally stash the people that they're bringing across, not give them food or water, but just give them caffeine pills so that they can get them across the border. And then, of course, you know, this year alone, there have been hundreds of bodies found within a mile of the border. So, you know, it's just this is a humanitarian crisis, and it's all at the feet of this administration.
Yeah, I mean, and back to the first point, that if there was a expansion of legal immigration, right, and it was mm-hmm. it was better, the cartels and the coyotes wouldn't have the business. The people would say, I'm not going to risk that and all that stuff that's laid out, and I'm being a drug mule, or the things that can happen to young ladies on the trip or the children. No, we're going to go the legal route. To heck with you.
Mm-hmm.
It just it drives up their demand if you do that. So, but mm-hmm. And that, before we wrap up, too, something that you and I have talked about, and I talked about with your opponent as well, and that is rural health care. And you look mm-hmm. at the between Mobile and Montgomery in AL2, there's a lot of area that's rural Alabama and healthcare issues. He had argued with me, debated with me. We talked about Medicaid expansion, for example, in the state. And his argument would be it would actually be a net savings to have Medicaid expansion, to have more people get early treatment, therefore not being a bigger burden on, you know, on resources going forward. Of course, that means people have to still go get health care and preventative care, and that we should do that, and we should expand it. We should take, like, all these, he said, well, there's all these other red states out there that took them. Alabama should do it, too. Your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, he keeps his silver bullet solution to rural health care, and it's urban health care crisis, too. I'm very grateful for USA, for Mobile Infirmary and, you know, in the Mobile area. But, you know, up in Montgomery, Jackson Hospital, which is so important, is really struggling financially. So, you know, it's not just a rural problem, but, you know, he keeps campaigning on Medicaid expansion, which is a decision that has to be made by the state legislature.
Right.
So, you know, either of us elected, you know, we couldn't do anything about that. But also, you know, just Medicaid expansion alone, and I say this as the daughter of a rural healthcare provider. My mother was a physical therapist and worked in rural Wilcox County, Butler County, Monroe County. She had to close her practice because most of her patients were on Medicaid and Medicare, and increasingly they're just not reimbursing for services. So if the majority of the patients of a hospital are on Medicaid, that's not going to be enough to keep them open. We've got to have a strong economy in order to have strong health care. So we've got to have good paying jobs. We've got to have folks with private insurers going to those hospitals, and also a you know, good local tax base of businesses and economies. So you know, he and I, whatever he wants to argue, can't do anything one way or another about Medicaid expansion. But what we can do is get our economy back on track. We can stop the reckless government spending that's increasing inflation, that's increasing the cost of medical supplies and what it takes to just operate a rural hospital, and also cut back on all these regulations. I mentioned earlier nursing homes. The Biden-Harris administration earlier this summer, back in May, rolled out some regulations impacting nursing homes that would require every nursing home occupant to receive a certain number of hours, we're talking multiple hours, of treatment time by a registered nurse every week. And so there are a lot of rural nursing homes that just don't have the registered nurse staff. And there are a lot of folks that live in nursing homes because they have a balance issue and their family lives far away. You know, they don't necessarily need to have appointment time on a weekly basis, but these regulations that were imposed, it's estimated to cause the average nursing home facility in the U.S. an additional $300,000 a year to comply with these regulations. But again, you know, it's not one size fits all. So we may see, you know, if unless we get some change in the White House, House and Senate, we may see a lot of rural nursing homes have to close down, which is, again, would be such a detriment to local communities. You know, being the daughter of a physical therapist who worked in nursing homes, they serve a really important purpose in our communities for people that have lived and worked in their town their whole life. They want to stay in their communities. They want to be with their friends and be close to family. And so Medicaid is certainly not the silver bullet solution, but we've got to have a strong economy. And that means we've got to have less inflation and less regulation.
Caroline, thank you for your time. Remind folks, too, although I do see your headquarters every day driving to and from work, but where they, if they want to get yard signs or things like that, how they can get it in person. And then for more information on your campaign, where do they go?
Yes. We have a headquarters in the Pinebrook Shopping Center, generally open from 10 to 2 most weekdays. Although if you give us a call, we can meet you whenever. And we also have some materials in the GOP headquarters next door. To find out more, dobsonforcongress.com. D-O-B is in Bravo, S-O-N-F-O-R, Congress. Thanks
hey,
so much.
Hey, thank you, Caroline Dobson. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:57 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here, and good to do this too because I'm heading out this afternoon to Mason Hills Farm for Smoke on the Farm. But every weekend through college football season, your chance to win that $100 gift certificate from Mason Hills Farm. And let's do it now. Looking for caller number 6 at 343-0106. 343-0106. Caller number 6, $100 gift certificate to Mason Hills Farm. Get that great meat for the grill for next weekend's games. Yeah, you cook out, or if you just want to. I'm not telling you how to use the gift certificate, but it would sure be nice if you could invite me over and so we can enjoy it. Plus, like I said, Smoke on the Farm going on today and tomorrow at Mason Hills Farm. I give you more information. You go online, find their address. Come on out and see us. We'll be out there this afternoon and hopefully sampling some of that great food that the folks, the competition teams are making. Good stuff. All right, good luck, and we'll be right back. Coming back next hour, John Hill from Ascension Technologies joins us. AI questions. I got a man who can answer them. So get them ready.